Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, June 25th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes and I sample the third in our malt sampler series. This time, it's Pilsner, Two Row, and Six Row. A tasting that turned out a lot more interesting and informative than it sounds on the surface, or at least it did to me. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, and if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Basic Brewing, and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters have already seen the show that's going to be posted to the general public on Friday. It's the video episode about my stab at a brew-in-a-bag small batch Captinus. Upper tier supporters on Patreon also have access to an extended behind-the-scenes video that's about 13 minutes long that shows the whole process. I had to improvise a couple of times during that brew day, so, maybe by looking at all the details of how I went about building this beer, maybe you'll be able to learn from my process and improve on it by watching. I do want to try it again because that resulting beer was delicious. Some very sad news coming out of Northwest Arkansas. Apple Blossom Brewing Company in Fayetteville, which you've heard on this show several times over the years, has permanently closed its doors. The current situation that we're going through with the virus and such was just too much, apparently. So kudos to everybody at Apple Blossom for being pioneers on the local beer scene here and for producing delicious beer and food over the years. Also, personally, many thanks for welcoming us into the brewery for recording episodes and for collaborating with me for a delicious cream ale. So here's to better times ahead. Speaking of better times, HomebrewCon Online was a lot of fun this past weekend. Cheers to the AHA for putting together an event that was not only fun, but really informative. I sat in on presentations from Annie Johnson, Lars Maria Skarsholt, Denny Kahn, and Drew Beecham, just to name a few. And looking forward to catching up on the presentations that I missed. I also sat in on a great presentation from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. Owen from Imperial led a tour of the production process there at their Portland, Oregon facility. And Nita and Elijah did a session of Insane in the Yeast Strain, comparing Kveik strains. One of those was the Summer Seasonal from Imperial A37 POG. That's P-O-G. Imperial says, after years of surviving in cold climates, this Kveik yeast is ready for the tropical lifestyle. When used at high temperatures, POG produces an extreme amount of tropical fruit aromas, including pineapple and guava. At the lower end of the range, more delicate citrus, peach, and kiwi aromas are noticeable. The beer style options are expansive for this yeast. Use it in a hazy, juicy IPA to complement the hops, or use it in a sour fruited beer to maximize the extreme aromatics. POG likes to work fast at high fermentation temperatures. It's also strongly flocculent, Imperial says, which makes it great for a fast turnaround. POG will be available in July, which is very close. I'm very excited. I've had fun fermenting with Kveik strains on the warmer temperatures, and my porch in the in the summertime is the perfect place for doing that. You know we love Imperial. They're the only organic yeast producer with the highest pitch rate of any liquid yeast supplier, 200 billion cells per easy open pouch. My stir plate is dusty because I don't make starters anymore for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches. Go to imperialyeast.com and ask your local homebrew store for Imperial organic yeast, including their new summer seasonal A37 POG. Imperial organic yeast. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Listener Rob writes, I'm finishing up lager fermenting my kettle-soured Berliner Weiss and was looking to make an addition of some grapefruit juice when I ran across something I hadn't seen before, a high-pressure processed juice. Have you ever discussed on the show high-pressure processing? I don't think so. Rob says it's an alternative method to heat-treating foods and is sometimes referred to as cold pasteurization. This appeals to me because there are no preservatives in the juice, so I can keep the whole thing fairly dry if I let the yeast have at the sugars in the juice. Rob says, I watched your grapefruit beer basic brewing video and saw that you froze yours and added at the end of the boil. Do you think I would need to freeze a high-temperature processed juice before adding to my already soured and fermented Berliner in the secondary? Or do you think the 3.3 pH in addition to the alcohol, even though it's low ABV, would be enough to keep infection at bay? Well, Rob, I got the idea for freezing fruit juice to add at the end of the boil from Brooke Baber and David Bowder, who were on the show way back in 2013 talking about Graff, Stephen King-inspired fruit beer. And I didn't freeze the juice to avoid contamination. In fact, I doubt that freezing would have an impact in that way. It was simply to jumpstart the chilling process. It's kind of like adding ice to the wort, but that ice is, it's made out of fruit juice. So it sounds like you don't need to freeze your fruit juice, especially if you're adding it to the fermenter. You don't want to make your yeast go to sleep. And also, if it's pasteurized, whether it's hot or cold or whatever, hopefully it doesn't have anything in there to infect your beer to begin with. So relax, don't worry, have a home brew and just add the juice to your fermenter. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa. Desiree posted the other day about a new electric brewing product that they're stocking. It's called the Brewbuilt Sling Blade. And no, it's not a device to make fried taters with mustard on it. You aim to brew with it. It's an innovative electric heating element designed to promote a rolling boil. It's sort of a crescent-shaped. So it sits on one side of the bottom of the kettle and creates sort of a dynamic turbulence in the wort as it's boiling. So it looks cool, and it's just another in long list of reasons highgravitybrew.com should be your first place to look when you're going electric. I love my Warthog brew-in-a-bag system from highgravitybrew.com, but there are all kinds of configurations and manufacturers that you can choose from at highgravitybrew.com. And Desiree and Dave will work with you to build an electric brewing system that's just right for how you brew. They sure nailed it with my setup. It's just right for me. Head on over to highgravitybrew.com and check out the Build Your Own Brewing System page. Electric brewing takes the pain out of propane, and highgravitybrew.com makes shopping for your electric system easy. And if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric gear purchase. Check it all out at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Now let's get connected with Steve Wilkes and malt sampler number 3. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James.
This is the third malt sampler, and I thought that this was going to be a fairly close one that we would have very much trouble in discerning between the three. But spoiler alert, it may be easier than we thought. We're comparing a Pilsner malt, 6-row, and 2-row. And when I talked to you about this, were you under the impression that this was going to be a close call?
Yeah, I figured that it would be relatively easy to pick out the Pilsner malt from the other two, but now I'm not so sure. I've tasted all three of these and they're all three different. I do have a feeling I know which one is the Pilsner. I feel fairly confident of that. The other two I'm not sure about.
Maybe so I'm overconfident.
I don't know. I haven't done my thorough, as usual, my Steve Wilkes highly scientific, thorough, legendarily analysis yet. Second show.
we've been drinking space yeast beer.
Yes.
So
the beer of the astronauts.
That's right. It's like space food sticks that nobody remembers except for Homer Simpson. There's an episode of The Simpsons where he gets. Remember, there's a package from his mom, who is his estranged mom, that he gets at the post office has been waiting for him, and he says, "Oh, space food sticks." It was like, "Oh my God, Homer remembers." So anyway, Tang and space food sticks. Okay, so this is the malt sampler, and so it's kind of like the hop sampler, only with the hop sampler we use extract, and obviously the hops are different in every batch. This is the malt sampler where I do small, all grain batches of beer that fit into a 1 gallon fermenter. It takes like 2.5 hours to do each batch. So it's a dedication, to do this, but I think it's worth it. So the recipe is you take 5 quarts of water or 4.7 liters and at 164 degrees Fahrenheit or 73°C, and into that you add 2 pounds or 900 grams of the base malt. And you so that gives you a mash rest temperature of 154 degrees Fahrenheit or 67.8°C, which I hold in my oven at that temperature for 1 hour. And at the end of that, I do, brew in a bag, and I collect my spent grains. And into that wort that I collect, I put, in this instance, 9 grams of German Hirschbrucker at 2.1% alpha acid, and I boil that for 30 minutes. And then I chill in an ice bath, which takes about 12 minutes to do. And then I pour it into the 1 gallon jug, and then I add 3 grams of USO5. And then I ferment that, and at the end of the fermentation, my wife Susan and I bottle, and we get a 6-pack out of each of these batches, and then I prime it with one of those carb tabs, Cooper carbonation drops. That's what it is, the little candy looking things, not the little aspirin looking things. A couple weeks later, here we are. So here we go. The stats, the Pilsner batch. The original gravity was 10.68, final gravity 10.10 for an ABV of 7.7%. The 6-row batch, original gravity 10.70, so 2 points higher, final gravity 10.11, 1 point higher, ABV 7.9%. So those two were pretty close together. The 2-row was original gravity 10.74. Which is 4 points higher than the 6-row, 6 points higher than the Pilsner, and the final gravity was 10.11. So it finished at about the same, but was, a few points higher, the original gravity. So the ABV is 8.4%. So it's a little higher in alcohol, but finished at about the same. So according to those numbers, the 2-row is a little more efficient at producing the sugars for fermentation than the other two. And I sent you a picture of the fermenters, which I will also post on the social medias. There is a color difference between these three, and especially between the Pilsner and the other two. The Pilsner is quite a bit lighter. The 2-row was Pilsner was quite a bit lighter than the 2-row. The 2-row was like a shade or maybe half a shade lighter than the 6-row. So those are sort of the technical stats. Am I leaving anything out on the technical side of thing before we get into the tasting, the sensory side?
Well, not really. I mean, as we get into them, we'll want to mention the Love a Bond, perhaps, and the diastatic power of each one.
Right.
We can taste and talk as we go.
Right.
Now, what taste we number one, see what we think about it.
Yeah, what we generally do, I give these beers to my wife, Susan, and she randomizes them, and she puts a piece of a duct tape on each cap, and then she numbers them. And so we're getting a randomized. We each have randomized samples with the same numbers on them. So your number one and your number two and your number three is the same as mine. So let's taste the number one beer. That's very nice.
Nice. It's got a nice creamy mouthfeel to it.
Mm-hmm.
The hops are really nice. So good job on the hop level that you did. It's not, it's kind of like the Mama Bear. It's just right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nice American pale ale is the way I would describe the beer. So my guess is that it's either 6 or 2. I don't know which, but I don't think it's a Pilsner beer. The hops come out really nicely in it, and I really like the mouthfeel of the beer. That's the thing that sticks with me the most, and it's just got a nice finish. The USO5 does, of course, it always does. It's just a good all around yeast, but really lets the beer finish out nicely, and just a nice beer. I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about it. It's not a dramatic beer.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's nice. It's nice and well rounded. And the hops, they don't jump out at you, but they are very present. This was just a bittering addition at 30 minutes. So, we're not talking about something that's been dry hopped or anything, but it's super drinkable. Right. And there is a grainy character to it. That I find appealing. It's a delicious beer.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's just a nice, really nice, just nice American pale ale,
mm-hmm.
to be sure.
There's a there's a little sweetness on the back end of it now that I'm tasting. Mm-hmm. But that may be attributed to the malt, But there's no like astringency or there's no off flavor to it. Not patting myself on the back on the not a very hard beer to make, but very enjoyable, very very nice. Nothing extraordinary, but nice.
That'd be a nice beer. If you just walked into a place and ordered a pint of pale ale, and they were served this, you'd be like okay, great. Give me another one.
Yeah. So the tradition in the malt sampler and the hop sampler is for you to read us a randomized descriptor of one of the ingredients.
Okay.
So what do you want to go with first?
Well, in no particular order, the one that I copied and pasted first was for the Breese Pilsner, although my computer corrected this to be Bruises Pilsner. Darn you, autocorrect. Breese Pilsner. So the official description from Breese is that it is an exceptionally light colored base malt that produces a very light colored, clean, crisp wort at 1.2 Lovibond color. The malt style is said to be clean, sweet, delicate, and malty. The color very light. It's the lightest colored base malt available. I assume that means to Breese rather than in the world.
Mm.
Although maybe they mean it that way. If you read it literally, that's what it would mean. It's interesting on the printout that I have two different Lovibonds. From their official product information sheet, it shows the diastatic power is 170. But on the sheet that I took from their website, probably a year or two ago, it says 140. Mm. So I'm not sure which is correct. And to be honest, the language that's on my website is the same language that would have been on their website.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I got it from. So, but I'm going to go with the product information sheet, which is a PDF that you can go to and download yourself. By the way, if you're interested, you can go to their website and download the exact product information sheets that they're there for the taking. but they just described the diastatic power as being 170 and the color as 1.2 love a bond. So there you go.
And diastatic power refers to the enzyme activity in there and the power of the base malt to convert starches into sugars, essentially. Number two, beer number two.
Also very nice. Nice and clean.
Ooh. Now, to me, I mean, first of all, number two is the lightest of the three, and that's quite obvious. But the hop character really jumps out at me. I mean, to me, there's just a ton of lemon and citrus.
Yep.
And it's just the whole character of the beer is super clean and, you know, nothing. There's still a malt presence, but it's not in the way. The hops really shine with this one. And when I first tasted it, it was just like, wow, a slap in the face between number one and number two as far as, like, I thought I'd made a mistake and put too many, you know, like twice as many hops in there in the second batch as the first. But, I mean, it's that stark. It's really a lot of difference between number one and number two.
Yeah, I think there is, too. There's a lot of difference. And you're right. The hops just jump off the page, you know, if it was a novel. They really play well, and I mean, this is the one that I think is Pilsner, and the Herzberger hop, you know, being, I guess it's a noble hop. I don't know if it is or not, but you know, it's one of those classic German hops, so it kind of makes sense with this, you know, classic German style malt that they would play so well together, and boy, do they ever.
Mm-hmm. And it's just that, you know, the lighter color, you know, since it's lighter color, it implies that it would have been kilned for a slight, you know, since it's a base malt, it should be like slightly less time, so that, you know, there's not like any kind of hint of roastiness coming through at all. I mean, it's just like naked. No. It's just like naked grain there, you know, for these hops to play on. It is a simple, straightforward beer, and I'm just wondering if I shouldn't be making like hoppy American pale ales with Pilsner malt.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, you know, that's what's interesting. Actually, the way I was thinking of it was that it makes that hop malt marriage much more important in my mind than perhaps it did 15 minutes ago. And what I mean by that is that even though, you know, even in the literature, you know, if you read uses for malts, it'll, you know, they'll, you know, pale malt and Pilsner malts, you know, in two row and six row, they'll all say, you know, great for all styles of beer. Well, that could be true. In fact, you know, more or less is, but it really makes a difference then what hop that you choose to pair with it. So for me, with these two beers that we've just compared, as much as I liked number one and the way the Herzberger played in it, compared to number two, there's no contest as far as the flavor for me. The number two beer is much better. But it makes me think if I'd used number one's malt, but perhaps a New World hop, you know, so maybe Herzberger is just not quite enough hop for that malt.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's any great insight. I'm sure that thousands of other brewers have had that insight before, but it's just the thought that not every malt is okay for every beer and not every hop is okay for every beer, that it really matters. And so you can't just look at the IBU count and the love a bond count and go, okay, that'll be okay. That'll
work. Now, I said maybe I should be making, you know, American pale ales or whatever with Pilsner malt. But in a sense, I have been, because all or almost all of the malts or the hop samplers have been made with Pilsen light malt extract. So I'm assuming that that is it wort, you know, that has been concentrated from a Pilsner malt bill. So in a sense, you know, all the almost all, I think we made one hop sampler without with, you know, something different. But yeah, all these hop samplers have been made with this Pilsen light malt extract. So, you know, essentially I have been making making those. Very compelling to me that those are so different. Number one and number two. So what's our second descriptor?
Okay, the second descriptor, again in no particular order, is from, and I know I'm going to butcher this, it Rahr, R-A-H-R. I just cannot seem to pronounce that. Rahr.
I think it's Rahr. I think it's Rahr.
Can
Rahr.
You say it?
Rahr.
Rahr.
Courage.
Rahr.
Courage.
Courage. Rahr standard 6-row. So I just recently started carrying 6-row just for the heck of it. And it, basically because I like cream ales and it's a historic beer, and I thought I'll just start carrying 6-row. So this is Rahr 6-row, and it's described by them, by that malt house, as a light-colored base malt made from a blend of American 6-row barley varieties. 6-row barley has a much higher protein content and enzymatic power than 2-row barley. Inclusion of standard 6-row is therefore very advantageous for recipes calling for large proportions of specialty malts, wheat malts, or adjuncts, which have little or no enzymatic power in themselves. 6-row barley is also used to match historical beer styles from settings where 2-row barley was not widely available. High proportions of 6-row barley may necessitate the use of adjuncts or require protein rests in mashing. And the Love a Bond for the Rahr 6-row is between 2 and 2.5.
Hmm.
And it says the diastatic power is less than 140.
Hmm. So less than 140, but what was the Pilsner from Bries?
Pilsner was from Bries was 170.
Huh. See, back in the day when we first started in this whole thing, you know, it was like 6-row. If you're going to use like any adjuncts like corn or anything like, you know, anything like that in your malt bill, you got to put some 6-row in there because it's got all those enzymes to chew up all that stuff and make, you know, turn those starches into sugars. But, you know, Pilsner malt sounds like at least the modern version of, you know, the Bries Pilsner malt. Sounds like it's stronger in that regard.
It does to me, too. Yeah, I was kind of blown away when I saw the numbers. It was interesting that when you look at Rahr's 2-row, they describe their 2-row malt as having a diastatic power of 110, where Bries describes its diastatic power of its 2-row as, let me make sure I get it right, as 140.
Mm.
So Bries says that it's that the diastatic power of its 2-row malt, which is the 2-row that I sell, has the same diastatic power as Rahr's 6-row. So if you're just matching enzymatic power or diastatic power between the two malts, there's no difference.
Right.
If these numbers are correct.
Right.
You know, if we can trust these numbers. Now,
And it may differ from manufacturer
to taste.
From manufacturer to manufacturer, it may differ. It may differ. You just got to look at the spec sheets.
Absolutely. Yep, you sure do. So again, the longer I'm in the business and the more I learn about it, the more I realize I don't know because I'm learning. You know, I'm learning so much more that I used to take for granted, or I used to you know, just assume that 6-row was had so much more diastatic power. Well, if you're only in the world of raw malt, then that could be true.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if you're comparing across different malt houses with different kilning techniques or different varieties of barley, different growing conditions, I don't know, and I don't claim to be an expert at it by any means, but it at least according to these spec sheets, if you're only talking about diastatic power, there's no reason to use 6-row over 2-row.
Mm.
If you're using Brees 2-row.
Right. And another important thing that you mentioned was the higher protein content of the 6-row, which may enter into the, could that enter into like more of a mouthfeel kind of a thing, or more of a grainy kind of a character that maybe it's not about the diastatic power anymore. Maybe it's about the different aspects of it.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. Was that I think that we get so hung up on these numbers, they're not theoretical numbers, they're real numbers. They really mean something. But we get so hung up on, well, this has a diastatic power of 140 and this has a diastatic power of 145. I've got to have the 145. What you want to go for is what does it taste like?
Mm-hmm.
What does it give you the taste that you want? I probably used this analogy before, but I'll use it again. So I'm a musician and I play the drums. And
that in itself is a contradiction.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I became a musician. I became a drummer because I like to hang out with musicians. But
it's just a joke. For our drummer fans out there, it's just a joke.
That's right. Well, you know what a drum solo and a sneeze have in common, don't you?
No.
You can tell it's coming, but you can't do anything about it. At any rate, here's my analogy. So if you're learning to play the drums and you're learning to play a technique and you get hung up on left, right, left, right, left, right, left, drag, blop, flop, flip, and you spend all your time with that, you might learn that technique, but you haven't addressed the music.
Mm.
You haven't addressed what it sounds like. So you've learned something mechanical, but you probably haven't learned anything about the music. And it's a little bit the same here. If you spend all your time worrying about the spreadsheet, you haven't paid any attention to what does this really taste like. So here we go with our 2-row, 6-row, brew off. There's certainly other reasons to use 6-row that have nothing to do with the diastatic power. Mm-hmm. There, I finally made my point. So we have agreed that we really like number two.
Yeah.
And now we're going to move on to number three.
Yeah. Number two, okay. We like for different reasons from the reasons that we like number one. Number three is sort of a Goldilocks situation between number one and number two, in my opinion.
Yeah. I agree. Wow.
Mm.
These are three different beers.
Oh, but that's good.
Mm-hmm.
You get the graininess, but you get that
sure
sharp
do.
The hop sharpness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That's really nice. I'm
huh.
That might be my favorite. That's really nice.
Wow. Huh. Yeah, you do get a lot of some malt character. So it's not like naked hops. But then the hops are still there. They're just on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bright and citrusy and maybe not citrusy, but I'd say citrusy.
There's a little citrus in there.
Yeah. It's not like pale ale or anything, but it's nice.
Yeah. Boy, these are all three really, really nice beers. Wow.
There's a little bit of tangerine in there on my palate.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Huh.
It's a more complex beer than number two. I think the number one and number two are, they're, number one had kind of the heaviest mouthfeel to me. It was really, compared to the other two, number one felt like the mm-hmm. biggest beer. It felt kind of heavy in my mouth. You know, it just right. like, that's a big bite.
Mm-hmm.
And then number one was kind of light and refreshing comparatively. And then number three is kind of right in that sweet spot between the two.
So you said number one was light and refreshing. I think you meant number two was light and refreshing.
Yeah, I meant number two. Yeah, I said that.
Just for those taking notes.
So number one was, yeah, number one felt, boy, and you know, again, splitting a lot of hairs here, but number one felt big and chewy and kind of heavy in terms of mouthfeel. Number two felt light and refreshing and crisp, kind of like a bright summer day, where number one would be kind of like a gray fall day, you know? And I'm trying to use concrete language. And then number three, totally surprised.
Partly cloudy.
Partly cloudy, yeah. But a nice day, a really nice day. I really like number three a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got one. Do we have one descriptor left? I've lost.
Yeah, we
lost
do.
Track.
We have one left.
You're driving the ship.
Well, here we go. We're on in probability drive to the power of 7.70 and falling. Where this is Brees Touro. So their language is, they describe it as clean, sweet, mild, malty. And also, they say that it has a light straw color. It gives a smoother, less grainy flavor. They describe it as a basic malt for all beer and ale styles. Typical color range is 1.8 Lovibond. And they just describe it as mild and malty. They don't spend a lot of words.
Now, how does the 1.8 compare to the other two? Do you remember, or do you have those notes handy?
I got them in front of me. So the, let's see, the Touro from Brees is 1.8 Lovibond.
Mm-hmm.
The Pilsner from Brees is 1.2 Lovibond.
Okay.
And the Six Row from Rahr is 2 to 2.5 Lovibond.
Oh, my. Okay.
So it's considerably darker.
Yeah.
And again, that kind of informs me about which one I think is which.
Yeah.
Because I can kind of see a difference between the three.
Yeah, I can too.
So that's the difference. Now in the Touro, let me get the right one up here again. So the Brees Touro, it's according to their product information sheet, it has a diastatic power of 140. And the color's 1.8. So really, between the three of these, in terms of the actual boots on the ground brew day, there's not a whole lot of difference in terms of its actual usage. So it really does get down, in my opinion, to what do they taste like? What do they bring to the party?
Well, the Pilsner had the higher diastatic power, right, of the three?
Yes, it did. Yeah, it definitely did.
Huh. Okay.
But again, if we're talking about it in terms of being homebrewers,
if it converts at the end of that 60-minute boil, then it's converted.
Yeah.
Mash. If it converts at the end of that 60-minute mash, then it's converted. It's not going to matter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. And so I don't want to get back on the whole efficiency thing and all that, but that, to me, that's really, really important if you're a commercial brewer and you're trying to eke every last little bit of efficiency out of everything you do, because it really matters, your bottom line.
Right.
But as a home brewer, put some more hops in it, dude. You know? I want my beer to be more hoppy. What do? Put some more hops in it. You know, it's like so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Official advice.
It's wow. When we got together and we decided to do these three, I thought there's no way we're going to be able to tell these three apart. There's just no way. And that shows you how little I know, you know, about base malts or about, you know, basic base malts. I thought that all three were going to be the same color and taste the same, and maybe the six row would be, you know, drier or something. I'm blown away by this whole thing.
Yeah, and they're very different. And then of course, this is just the stuff I sell, and I don't sell that much. I mean, can you imagine if we had, you know, the ability to do this across, you know, all of the dozens of malt houses around the world?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could spend your life doing this.
Yeah.
And you know, you could make yourself crazy. But it's a good experiment to do for us at our local homebrew shop, which just happens to be mine. But, you know, if you're out there, you know, wherever you live, you know, in Kalamazoo or, you know, Anchorage or wherever, and you've got a local homebrew shop, they're going to have what they sell.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to carry everything in the world because they can't. Nobody can. And so it would be a great experiment to do this with the ingredients that are available to you where you live.
Right.
I think it's a great exercise, and I've certainly learned a lot about, in this case, it's helped me because I understand the products that I sell better today than I did yesterday.
Yeah.
That's very helpful.
So I've got my guesses locked in. I would place a bet on this one. That's my hubris. I'm flying close to the sun. My wax wings are melting.
I feel fairly confident, but I don't feel as confident as you do.
Okay, well, I think we're confident on number two, aren't we? Shall we open number two? I think number two is the Pilsner. I think it's fairly obvious.
Okay. I do too.
Unveil number two. Yep, it's the Pilsner.
Okay.
All right. Yep. We got that out of the way. All right. So make your arguments for number one and number three. What do you think?
I think that, let me take one more little sip. I'm going to outthink myself here.
See, I'm confident, but I'm still going to drink some beer. I haven't eaten a lot today. It's supper time. And
I haven't either. I think number one is a six row.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think it's right.
Yep. Six row, and then number three, just to make sure. I'm confident in Susan's ability, but just to make sure she didn't. Two row. All right.
Yep.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. It does.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised that number six and number. I'm surprised that the six row and two row aren't flipped. In other words, going into the experiment, I expected the six row to taste more like the two row tastes.
Huh.
That probably didn't make much sense, but
no.
But the six row is to me, it's the heaviest, thickest. It's got the most mouthfeel,
mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think if you're, you know, if for me, so if I was looking to brew a kind of chewier, I don't know, you know, a really chewy IPA that I wanted to have a really big mouthfeel, but I didn't want to add a whole lot of adjuncts to, like a lot of crystal malts to, I might choose a six row.
Yeah.
It'd be a great, great base malt for
it. Yeah.
Because it really handles.
And I think that's maybe the protein.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. But by the same token, that Breeze 2 row, man, that's nice. That just was nice and clean and just right down the slot. I mean, it just just as a simple beer, a simple little smash beer, that's really drinkable beer. That was super good.
Yeah.
And by the same really token, the Pilsner as well, but in a different way.
Mm.
I don't know. It's really interesting, really educational. This is my favorite. Yay. This has been the one that I've learned the most from.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Number two, the Pilsner is almost perfumey in the amount of hops that's mm-hmm. coming off of that. It's just like just an incredible. You would think that there was a different amount of hops put into that one from the other two.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, the sixth row is much more malty and substantial. And then the two row is the Goldilocks. It's the, you know, the happy medium of the three.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this is awesome.
It's really something. Yeah.
The only question is, we got to figure out what to do next on the malt sampler. It's amazing. It'll be hard to top this one.
Yeah, we'll come up with something.
Yeah. All right, Steve.
All right, James.
Well, keep well, and keep safe, and we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good.
Thanks again to Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. That was a lot of fun. I was sure that it was going to be a lot more difficult than that because I thought those were very similar, but another reason to do these things. You learn something. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.